We're going to have our exam number 2, which is on chapters 5. So you're studying stocks, continue to study stocks, chapter 5, make sure you understand, study stocks. Then we're going to do the calculations in chapter 6. Now, it usually takes 2 sessions, but I have a funny feeling it might take us more. So we'll see. And also, this class, the attendance has been pretty spotty. I guess because it's 9:30, so, you know, what can I say? So we may have the exam next Thursday or the Tuesday after that. We'll see. Got your calculators? We can get your calculators out. You're going to need your calculator. We're going to do calculations today, so you need your calculators. Pull them out. And we are doing... So look. If you look on the website, you'll see that I always put the date of the next exam there. So if you're confused about the date of the next exam, make sure that you just check the website. So you see I say March 7th, tentative, chapters 5 and 6. Where'd Bonka go? You get her calculator? Oh, man. I hope she wouldn't leave in the middle of class. All right. So how are we doing? Not bad. We're back up to 2.38%. Can you see that? Where are you going? 2.38%. So Apple's still down. And boy, there's a lot of stuff going on about Apple. But look, Coca-Cola's responded. And yay, Procter & Gamble. Toyota, not bad. UPS, not bad. All right, questions, thoughts, ideas, comments, criticisms? Because we're ready to tackle common stock valuation. We could look at a couple of the slides. We can review those. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? No, count on me for bad jokes. I don't only have bad jokes.
Count on me for jokes.
For jokes, okay, but they're not good jokes. They're bad jokes. Did I tell you about the alligator that walked into the bar? How about the duck and the mushroom and the neutron? And how about the anteater? You missed it. How about the lamp? No, see, I didn't tell you about the lamp that walked into this bar. So this lamp walks into a bar. Have you heard this one before? And the lamp goes up to the bartender and says, I want a beer and a shot of whiskey and a glass of tequila and wine. And the bartender says, wait a minute, that's a lot of alcohol. And the lamp says, that's right, I want to get lit.
Wouldn't that be a candle?
See, the lamp, what?
It's a candle.
A candle. Well, that too. You can say the candle. Yeah, you can say candle. Candle was his buddy. Okay. All right, now, we did not go over the worksheet number 2. So, I mean, we did go over worksheet number 2, but we did not go over worksheet number 3. So that's another reason why we'll probably move up a day. So pull out chapter 5, worksheet number 3. Because we discussed valuation. We took a look at valuation and market capitalization. We're going to discuss volume valuation today. Yeah, we did worksheet number 2 on Tuesday. So make sure you do that. It's on the website. Remember, everything is on the website. You got to come to class. Please come to class. Please come to class. Come to class. Please come to class. If you need a 3-ring binder, I got a couple extras. Pass one back there. So we did worksheet number 2. Now worksheet number 3. And we learned on Tuesday that market capitalization is segmented into 3 categories, large, mid, and small. And do you remember what the demarcation lines were? Large cap? 10, right. Anything above about $10 billion is a large cap. Got extras? Okay, thanks. And then mid-cap was 1 or 2, depends who you talk to, up to about $10 billion. So between 1 or 2 billion, up to about $10 billion. And then small-cap was, say, less than $1 billion or $2 billion. Depends on who you talk to. You know, some people will allow up to $2 billion. All right, and we calculated it by simply multiplying the number of shares out there that are being traded out there at any given time times the market cap, times the market price. So take a look at number 1, Marriott. Have you heard of them? Marriott International? Who's Marriott? Tough question, folks. You don't know who Marriott is? It's a hotel chain, right? It's a hotel chain. So where do you think they're traded? Marriott? They're on the New York Stock Exchange. Yeah, they're on the New York Stock Exchange. But again, all you got to do is look it up. What? Okay, this is the back of problem number worksheet number two. So all you got to do is look it up. So the recent stock price was $40.29, and there are how many shares outstanding? Right, 315.454 million shares. So if you have a scientific calculator, then you can do all the zeros and everything. But all you have to do is really write down the name million. That's all you really have to do, and that's what they're going to do in the industry. You're going to see, they're not going to show you all the zeros. They're just going to write down million. So multiply 40.29 times 315.254 million, and what do you get? Where's your calculators? Come on, bud. What? Good. I'm glad to hear that. Come on. You got your calculators out. You use your cell phone. All right. 12,000. And if you want to put the point in there. And 4-1. And then, 106, I'm sorry. And then write the word million. You see, it's because we don't have all the zeros after that. We just have the word million. Just write the word million. And so this company is worth $12,713.106 million. Would we write it that way?
No.
What would we do?
No.
We would, you could put the word mil there. What we would do is just write it this way, $12.713 billion. Are you with me? You understand why? 1,000 millions are a billion. So, yeah. So what you will see when you look this up on the... Well, let's go look it up. This is a few days ago. I'm sorry, a couple weeks ago. If you typed in Marriott... Where did it go? The quotes here. If you typed in Marriott, M-A-R, or typed in Marriott, you'll see... Did I hit enter? What's it? Are you guys awake? What's going on here? You can't see it? Would you hit the lights, please? Yeah, all the way down. Okay. If you typed in Marriott, you'll see 12.32. So it's gone down a little bit, hasn't it? What was the price we had here? 40.29. And a few weeks ago, it was 40.29. So it's gone down a little bit. So they write it as 12.32 billion. So you could write it either way. You could write it as 12,713 million, and if you have a scientific calculator, you can write out all the zeros, it's up to you. Or write it out as 12.7 billion. This is the way you will see it. Any questions? Any thoughts?
Yes.
So, is it a large cap, mid cap, or small cap? Yeah, it's moved into the world of large cap. Okay, excellent. Next one. Shall we leave the lights off, or can you read your paper? Okay. I'm sorry? Oh, stock type. Oh, sorry. What would you call Marriott? What would you call a hotel? Is it a growth industry, growth company? Is it a defensive? Is it a blue chip? Cyclical. Exactly. Because the hotels depend on the economy doing well for more business, because that's a lot of their people are business travelers, and for vacations. People going on vacations and staying at their hotel. So they're fairly cyclical. So you could write down cyclical. Would we call them a blue chip? Have they entered the world of blue chip? Yeah, I don't think so. I think McDonald's would look down on them and say, oh, no. Okay, number two. What's number two? Ryder Trucks. Have you heard of Ryder Trucks? What do? Test this back. Do they own U-Haul? Right, they're like U-Haul. They rent trucks. Ryder rents trucks. And notice they got R. Woohoo. Are they big? Usually we only give one letter symbols to companies that are huge, like Ford or Citigroup, AT&T, but Ryder gets an R. And where do you think it is? Well, he's going to need to hire a secretary. Ryder Trucks, where do you think they're listed? You don't have to be right. Wake up. Come on. We got work to do. Where do you think they're listed? NASDAQ? New York Stock? You have to know this, folks. Where?
Amos.
Yeah, because they're kind of smallish. Yeah. But no, they're actually on the New York Stock Exchange. And so what we're going to do is we're going to calculate their market cap as that's $57.90. Right? They've gone down a little bit since I did this. $57.90 times the number of shares outstanding. How many shares? 52. I can't even read that. I got bad eyes. 50.80 million shares. So multiply the market price of $57.90 times 50.80. And what calculation do you get? Somebody besides the usual. 2,941 point whatever million. But would we write it that way? You can write it that way. On the exam, no problem. You can write it that way. But would we normally see it that way? No. What we're going to see is we're going to see them move the decimal point 3 to the left, and you'll see 2.94 billion. And since we did this, I put a date on here, right? Just February 1st. Since we did that, Ryder's fallen a little bit. So now they're down to 2, or are they going up? Yeah, they've gone down a little bit. So is this a large cap, a mid cap, or a small cap? This is a mid cap, right? This is a mama bear. Excellent. And what kind of stock is it? Growth, blue chip, defensive, turnaround. I don't know. They might be. I doubt it. They're cyclical because they're in the business of transportation. They're in the business of transportation, so they're transporting stuff, and the more stuff that needs to be, well, actually, they're renting their trucks out to people who are moving stuff. So I would call them a cyclical. Any questions? Are we going too fast for you?
No.
Okay. Next one. Who's this? What? A question? Going too fast? You got to ask questions. Yes. Oh, they're in the New York Stock Exchange. You see it right there? See it right there? New York Stock Exchange. Cardium Therapeutics. Have you ever heard of them? Cardium Therapeutics? They're based here in San Diego. And this is the kind of stock that I was a sucker for 10, 12 years ago. The biotech startups that are doing phenomenal things and all going out of business. And this is the kind of stock that I would have bought and lost a lot of money on. What is their, where do you think their CXM, where do you think they're traded? You don't have to be right. What? No. They're a biotech. Well, were they a biotech startup? Where would you think? Well, maybe, yeah. The OTC, the bulletin board, you guys are cruel. If you don't know, all you do is type in the name, Cardium Therapeutics, or type in the symbol, CXM, and this is your assignment for Chapter 5. So some of you are doing this, right? Right? And we click on that, and we find that they're actually on the MICET. The New York Stock Exchange MICET, or Market, or what used to be called the Amex. So they're on the MICET. So you can put Amex or MICET. And 17 cents. Ooh. This is, I almost bought them when they were $1.84. Aren't you glad I didn't buy them? So eight with 19 cents here. 19 cents, because this is what's on the... you do this, it's 19 cents. And so 19 cents times the number of shares outstanding, 129.22 million, and that's why you guys said that, is it on the pink sheets, is it on the bulletin boards? So 19 cents times 129.22 million is? $24.55 million. See, for Cardium Therapeutics. They had some phenomenal technologies, which they've sold to stay alive. They had a device They're not the only one. But if you ever have any of your family members or friends or yourself, you have a stroke, rush to the hospital. Get there, or maybe call 911. They'll tell you which hospital to go to. And what will they do? What do they do? Do you, anybody know? They freeze you. They lower your body temperature. This is what these people developed, and they sold it because they needed money to stay alive. They bring your body temperature way down. And what that does is it reverses. You got to do it within a few hours, though. Don't wait. Got to get there as soon as possible. It reverses the effects of the stroke. Pretty amazing, isn't it? And I was so excited because they were doing some other stuff with the heart and everything, and I thought, I'm going to invest in this company. And then I thought, well, how did the other ones you invest in turn out? Not so good. So I didn't do it, and I'm glad I didn't. Now, as it was at 19 a few weeks ago, and then it might be at 15 next week, and they're in trouble. Actually, they're being threatened to be kicked off the New York Stock Exchange MiCA, and they'll wind up on the pink sheet. You read. What does it say? Headlines! Yeah, and then you'll see some headlines here, headline, and you go to their website, they'll say investor relations, they'll send you out their package.
That's everything to do with
CXM? Yeah, with Advocardium Therapeutics. You know you guys don't like it, but this is a real effective way to learn. Keep it a secret. Keep it a secret. So is this a large cap, a mid cap, or a small cap? In fact, it's micro. Exactly, it's micro. It's verging on the penny stock. And now the last one. You hear Oracle? What type of stock is this? We could put turnaround because they're trying to turn themselves around. We could put Garner. We could put OTC penny stocks. They're a biotech company, and they've got some serious. I mean, the technologies are so cool, but they probably won't make a dime off of it. It's very sad. Now they're into selling vitamins, believe it or not, if you can believe that. Okay, so put down penny stock or turnaround or Garner. Now, what about the next one? Have you ever heard of Oracle? What? Well, they're everywhere. They're up to Palo Alto. They're Silicon Valley. Oracle is the company that you use every time you go online and buy something or go to your bank or anything. They write database software. And it is the best, most fabulous, fantastic database software. IBM has a good competitor. It's pretty good. And a few other competitors are out there, but Oracle's the best. And so you use Oracle all the time. You don't even know it. All right, so what was the recent stock price? You guys are going to help me because I can't see this at all. 35.51?
Yeah.
And how many shares? 4.73 billion shares. Yeah, so multiply that out. And how much is this company worth? 167.962 billion dollars. One of the world's richest men is the CEO. His name is Larry Ellison. Yeah. And so let's take a look. Where do you think it's on? What do you think? Oracle, right? Nasdaq, of course. Nasdaq. It's one of the text. What did I do? What did I type? Oracle. I thought I did it right. Oracle. Yeah, I did it right. So it's down a little bit from when we bought it. I mean, when we did this, it was 35. Now 34. So it's a large cap. In fact, exactly. In fact, it has made its way into the big world, where we could call it a mega cap. You call it large cap or mega cap. Either one is correct. All right. Stock types. Well, you know, it used to be a growth, right? It used to be one of the high-tech growth items, but now it's become a blue chip. And the McDonald's of the world looked at it. It's only been around 20 years. No, but I would think Oracle is one of, I don't know, it's up to you. But remember, we talked about blue chip. Blue chip were the companies that were the tried and true have their roots deep in the economy, and we got the name because the most expensive chips used to be blue, and only gentlemen bought stocks. You know, the hoi polloi, the little folks never dabbled in investing. They didn't have any money. Blanca, did I got you? Am I losing you on this? Do you know what we're doing here? Okay, we're just multiplying the two numbers. What?
I can see that.
Yeah, I know. I can't see either. So one time, turn the lights back up. I can't see either. You young folks with your good eyes. Good for you. So afterwards, we'll go do it again. All right, excellent. So let's continue now with the stock valuation. Make sure you can do this. Make sure you can do this. And, of course, you don't really have to do it because you just look it up. Common stock valuation, folks. This is the heart of the course. Common stock valuation. And we said on Tuesday that value matters. We ignore value at our peril. We discussed what is the worth of a company. How much is a company, how much is a stock that represents ownership in the company worth? Well, a fundamental assertion holds that the value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. But we also found that it ain't going to be difficult, it ain't going to be easy to figure out what the future holds for us. We can say, oh, look, this is how much a company earned in the past, and they seem to be growing at this rate, so that's what it'll be earning in the future. But are we right? It's like trying to predict the weather. So this is where we ended. The most fundamental influence on stock prices is the level and duration of the future growth of earnings, and for some dividends, because some companies aren't paying dividends. However, as Mr. Professor Burton Malkiel, who wrote in the wonderful book A Random Walk Down Wall Street, future earnings growth is not easily estimated, even by pros, market professionals. So do any of us know what's going to happen in the future?
No.
So is it going to be easy to do this?
No.
And so let's take a look at how we go about. Let's see if we can get our arms around it. Security analysis is the process of gathering and organizing information and then using it to determine the value of a share of common stock. And this was the work was pioneered back in the 1920s, 30s by a gentleman by the name of Benjamin Graham, who incidentally wrote The Intelligent Investor and Security Analysis, and I'll show you that book later on. He was Warren Buffett's teacher. And so we're going to learn some of the techniques that he would teach Warren Buffett. What we're trying to find out is the underlying or inherent value of the stock as determined through security analysis. And the question is, what security analysis methods or measures does one use to determine the intrinsic value of a company? Future dividends, potential capital appreciation, price to earnings ratio, financial ratio, past price performance, the amount of the risk. Value is in the eye of the beholder. Two people look at a company and see two entirely different things. 2 million people look at a company and see, 3 million different things. So everybody's saying, yeah, this is a great deal. No, that's not a great deal. And do we know if either is correct? We may believe one way or the other, but we'll know in 3 to 5 years. And by that time, it's usually too late. Okay. Fundamental analysis. Now, nothing to do with religion, folks. Fundamental religion. No. It's called fundamental analysis. It's the examination of a firm's accounting statements and other financial and economic information to assess the economic value of a company's stock. Here are some of the examples of the fundamentals. The competitive position of the company. Is it Coca-Cola? Is it Pepsi-Cola? Or is it RC-Cola? Are you with me? Is it Walmart, Costco, or Kmart? The growth prospects for the company and its market, the profit margins, the earnings, what assets are available, the company's capital structure, which is a fancy way of saying how much debt do they have, how much do they own of the company, how much equity, how much debt. Simply put, according to fundamental analysis, the value of the stock is influenced by the performance of the company that issued the stock. Now, later on, we're going to see another type of analysis called technical analysis that says, all this, and just looks at little squiggles on the screen. Or on the, we used to be on the paper, now it's on the screen. And that's how they determine whether what they're going to buy and sell. So I think those people are goofballs. We'll deal with that later. The first analysis we're going to take a look at is called financial ratio analysis. Financial ratio analysis. One method of security analysis involves looking at certain financial ratio measures. We've already discussed a couple of them. Financial ratios give us a quick and easy method for comparing one company to other companies within their industry or the stock market as a whole. Now, the problem with these statistics is that you can't just look at one statistic. You can't just say, oh, this is it. This is the reason I'm going to buy. Or, this is the reason I'm going to sell. You have to look at them in context of everything else you see. And I don't know if it's a good analogy, but I like to think of a stew. I like to think of the Germans call it ein Pot, right? It's an entire meal in one pot or in one dish where everything is thrown in there together. The first ratios we will look at are called the price ratios. And we will look at others later on in the next chapter. And the most popular, sometimes people call it the most important stock market statistic, is the PPE, price to earnings ratio. Now, we're already learned how to compute it. You don't have to. You just look it up. They'll tell you. You just take the price and divide it by the earnings. But so much is described by just this one little statistic. Historically, what were they in? 5 to 15 or so, 5 to 12, 14 to 20 was what you got once you were growing. Anything above 20 was unusual, but there are certain times in history, and now one of them, not as much as it was in the late 90s, the late 60s, late 20s, when PEs just went to the sky. So let's take a look at some companies. And we've already taken a look at some of the PEs. And all these companies have one thing in common. They all begin with the letter F. And none of them don't read anything else into it. So instead of looking at the screen, because you guys have a hard time seeing it without the lights turned off, but then you can't see your screen, your calculation, your notes. FedEx, what do you think they're going to get? What kind of PE? Guess. You don't have to be right.
14.
Pretty close, 17. About the market average, a little higher than the market average, because people are pretty excited, not pretty excited, but somewhat excited about the future prospects of FedEx. What do you think about FedEx? You think they're going anywhere? Okay, remember, you can just take the battery out. If you don't know how to turn them off, folks, I know some of you millennials, it's like turning off your pacemaker or turning off. No power button, right? Well, just pull up. What?
Voice activated.
Shut up.
What's the
ATV right now? About 14, 15. Ford? 3. What are investors saying about the future prospects for Ford? That's what investors are thinking, aren't they? They're thinking, cyclical stock, we're going into a recession, this company's going to get hammered. Are they right?
Maybe not. No, the government bailouts.
They didn't take the bailout.
Yeah.
They said, no way. They begged, borrowed, and stole every dime they could get, so they didn't take the bailout. And there's a lot of people who walk into a Ford dealer and say, I bought GMs for all my life, but I'm buying a Ford now because those jerks took the bailout and you didn't. The guy who runs Ford is a genius.
Can we just buy a stock from Ford right now?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying, I want you to decide. And here are the questions you have to ask yourself, apart from after we do some calculations. Do you believe that Ford is going to survive? If you do, this, in my humble opinion, is a pretty darn low PE for a company that should do well over the next 5 to 10, 15 years. The average age of cars in America is now older than it's ever been. Now, part of that is because cars just last longer, but also part of it is people are just knocked down, drug out by the recession. So what do you think?
What's their stock price?
Relax. Now, what do you think of... We already looked at Farr's book, so I sort of took it away. What was Farr's book? You're right. It's stupid. Remember, what does IPO stand for? It's probably overpriced or imaginary profits only. And so if Facebook doesn't get on the stick soon, or however you want to say it, and increase their revenues... You know, to grow the earnings part of the price to earnings, what's going to happen to the price? You got to grow the denominator, or the numerator is going to shrink. And then what about First Solar? They're losing money. So if a company is losing money, instead of putting a negative sign there, because negative price divided by earnings would give you a negative number, they write down not applicable. What's First Solar? A solar company. They were flying high a few years ago, but now they've... Solar does well when energy prices go up. When energy prices go up, people go, well, I'll get a solar system. Or, you know, do something ecological. When energy prices go down, people say, I don't want a solar system. We have one. It works fine until it doesn't work. Okay. Historically, a company's P/E ratio was supposed to match its growth rate. If a company was growing at 20% per year, then a P/E of 20 was justified. During the internet bubble, many companies had P/E ratios in the hundreds. I remember looking down at the screen and thinking, this is it. It ain't going to last. I don't know when it's going to go down, but it's not. The market's going to be destroyed. eBay had 10,000 in 1999, 98. Growth stocks, as we said, typically have high P.E. ratios. Value stocks have typically low P.E. ratios. But as we described back in Chapter 5, remember our discussion. A value stock might not necessarily be a good value if the PE is low, but if the company's going out of business, if Ford goes out of business, is that 2.95 PE a good value? No. So be careful. The PE ratio tells you how long it will take in years, assuming no changes in earnings and the price, but everything's changing all the time, for a company to earn back its price. So if nothing changes and Ford keeps doing what it's doing, in 3 years it will earn back its price in earnings. Now, whether or not we get those in dividends, that's a different issue. But they will earn back their price in 3 years. A company with a P.E. of 20 will take 20 years. A company with a P.E. of 1,888 will take almost 2,000 years to earn back its price.
What do you mean, earn back their price?
Well, think about it. If their earnings, let's go look at Ford. Ford is earning how much? Can you see the earnings per share? This is part of what your assignment is. Can you see that? That's not right. Something's not right. The P went up to 9. Oh, you know what? They must have announced their earnings. Okay. Now their P is 9. Not a good choice. That's a good choice. Okay. The P is now 9. They must have announced their earnings since when I did this.
I got my stock down.
Too late. You should have bought it before. Their P is 9. Their earnings per share is equal to $1.42. Remember, the price divided by the earnings is equal to the P.E. So if you turn around and multiply the P.E. times the earnings, you math fans should know you'll get the price. So multiply 9 times $1.42 and you should get close to 12.86, because remember the price is bouncing around. Is that what you get? 12.78. You know, the price went up 10 cents. Okay, there you go. You understand? Now, does that make sense? Where? Whoa.
Well, so it'll take them 9 years to earn $12?
Exactly. Well, $12.86 or 78 cents. Yeah. If nothing else changes. And remember, everything is changing. Next quarter, they're going to earn something different. And the next quarter, they're earning something different. So we're just looking at a snapshot in time, knowing that it's like the weather. Things are changing all the time. You understand? Okay, all right, let's continue. Whoops, wrong one. That doesn't work on that. Now, price to cash flow is the same idea. Instead of price to earnings, we're going to take a look at their price divided by their cash flow. And you might say, well, wait a minute. How could earnings and cash flow be different? Well, it's actually very easy. You folks who have taken accounting, you know that depreciation and certain other expenses really aren't expenses. They're just entries in a log. Remember, you accountants? You get to take a depreciation and lower your earnings. But you didn't write a check out for depreciation. No cash went out of your pocket. It just lets you pay less in taxes. And so cash flow often differs from earnings per share. And there are several reasons, but the biggest reason is depreciation. And you will hear people talk about good quality and poor quality earnings. During the internet mania, many companies were reporting record earnings. Huh? At the same time, their cash flow was negative. They're having record earnings and their checkbook balance is going down? How could that happen? Well, one of the greatest examples was Lucent Technologies. And this is a company that was spun off from AT&T. They make the best telephone equipment in the world. And at the end of the 1990s, as cell phones started to become ubiquitous, like that word, ubiquitous? What does it mean? Everywhere. I'm talking a different language for some of you. I apologize. They were everywhere. Cell phone, everybody's going to buy a cell phone. Everybody's going to get internet access. And so Lucent Technologies was selling all this equipment, all the equipment they could make to companies that had never made a dime and probably would never make a dime. You might have heard of one called Windstar. Windstar? Yeah, well, they're gone. They went out of business over 12 years ago. And so what happens? Lucent Technologies could not get Windstar to pay for this stuff because no bank would lend them the money. So Lucent said, we'll lend you the money. They gave them sold them the $2 billion worth of equipment, and Windstar was going to pay them $100 million a year for the next, whatever, 30 years. Windstar didn't last 2 or 3 years. So Lucent gets the equipment back, but what are they going to do with that? It's already 2 or 3 years old. It's already obsolete. Nobody else is going to buy it. You understand? You understand what happened? Lucent, I know, Lucent almost went bankrupt because of that. They had record earnings and their checkbook balance went down. That's why you have to look at cash flow. And then another one is price to sales. Same idea, but instead of dividing the price by the earnings or the cash flow, we're going to divide it by the sales. And the idea is the higher the price to sales, the higher the sales growth, the lower the sales growth. During the internet mania, many analysts used price to sales instead of price to earnings, since most of all the new companies never generated any earnings. They were losing money, so they would look at their price to sales and say, look, but their sales are growing. And the more they sell, the more they lose. That's a good sign. The more customers they get, the more they lose. Isn't that a good sign?
No.
Yeah, it didn't turn out that way. It wasn't a good sign. It turned out to be a really bad sign. You ever hear of Web Grocer? No, Home Grocer and Web Van. Did you hear about these companies? They're gone now. But you were never going to go into another supermarket again. This was the late 90s. Some of you were kids. What? You can still, I mean, Vons will sell it to you, and they have their own trucks. But these companies were just spending money like it was going out of style and giving away $75 of groceries to new customers. And you went online and you ordered your groceries, and they would drive them to your place, and they lost more money than they ever made on every customer. Every new customer they got, they lost money. How long do you think that was going to last? Not long. It didn't last very long. Just enough to get your free groceries. And then price to book ratio. The book ratio is one of the things I ask you to look up in Chapter 5. It's a little tricky. It's under the key statistics. I'm sorry. You're supposed to laugh. The key statistics menu item. And this is the same idea. We take the price and we divide it by the book value. And the book value is what the accountants say the company is worth on the books. You take the assets, subtract the liability. Come on. You guys, tell him it's not important. This is not important. He's in class right now.
It is important.
Your car's going to have a baby. Sister needs a new transmission. So you take the price and you... You too? This can't continue.
They just call each other.
Meet in the bathroom.
No, guys don't meet in the bathroom. Women meet in the bathroom. Come on, girls. Oh, actually, oh, no, where are we going with this? Let's go with something else. Okay. If the price-to-book ratio was greater than 1, then shareholders believed the firm was creating value above and beyond the physical assets of the corporation. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? If a company is in business, say a pizza shop, doesn't it make sense that they'd be worth more than the pots and the pans and the seats and all the other stuff that the pizza shop has? Yeah, you certainly hope so, because that means money's coming in and you're making money and being able to pay the employees. Well, that's true of major corporations. What we're going to find is the price is normally 3 times or 4 times, sometimes less, more than the book value. If you sold off all the assets, paid off all the debts, how much would be left in cash? That's the book value. So, how do we make any money off of this? How can we use this information, these very simple calculations, to predict the future? Well, we use what's called price ratio analysis. To predict future stock price using price ratios, we multiply a historical price ratio by the expected future value price ratio denominator. It's easier to do than it is to explain. In the chapter 6 of the 4th edition, 6th edition, I'm sorry, and it's at the, there's a 6th edition in the library, there's a 4th edition in the library, somebody stole the 5th. So go there, if you don't have one, or I have one in my office, come by and use it during my office hours, or we'll make an appointment. And in the 6th edition, they use Intel in late 2009. So you've heard of Intel, right? Everyone say right. If you haven't heard of Intel, we'll talk after class. You've been living under a cave. Okay. In late 2009, the price was $19.40. All right? And their earnings per share were equal to 92 cents. All right? Now, you go back 5 years, and you find that the average P.E. ratio was 20.96. Okay? 20.96. So write that down. 5-year average P.E. ratio was 20.96. Now, I'm sorry, no dollar sign. This is at P.E. You go online and you read about Intel, and Intel says, you know, we think we're going to grow our earnings about 8.5% next year, and the analysts say, yeah, we think Intel's going to grow their earnings next year by about 8.5%. So the earnings per share growth rate is equal to 8.5%. So next year at this time, late 2010, we expect the earnings of Intel to have increased 8.5%. So what can we do? It's a very simple calculation. You take the historical P.E. ratio. You then multiply it by the projected P.E. ratio. I'm sorry, P.E. earnings per share. You take the historical P.E. ratio and you multiply it times the projected earnings per share. Well, what's the historical P.E. ratio? Everyone should say 20.96, so I know you're alive. What's the historical P.E. ratio? 20.96. That's an estimate. You see? Estimate. We think, we believe that Intel is going to have 8.5% more earnings next year at this time. Given where they've been coming from and PC sales and whatever they're selling are going up. Are you with me? So it's an estimate. Do we know it's going to happen in the future? No. Well, we might be close. Now, so what's the projected earnings per share? Well, they're the current earnings per share, which is... Everyone say 92 cents. Do you understand why they're the current earnings per share? Because the problem says so. The current earnings per share, 92 cents, multiplied times 1 plus the growth rate. And for those of you who understand percentages, that's 100% plus 8.5%, or 1 plus 0.08. I'm five. So did I lose you on that? The historical P/E ratio is 20.96. Got it? The current earnings per share are 92 cents. Well, if they're going to grow by 8.5%, to find out what they're going to be next year, we simply multiply it by 100%. What it? Come on in. Go sit down. There's a seat over there. 1 plus 8.5%. Well, what's 8.5%? 0.085. What's 100%? 1. So that's 1.085. Does everybody see that? Nod your head, yes? Okay. 8% is 0.085. Perfecto. What a great class. You're welcome. And if you do that calculation, it's what? Can you do it? Is it that hard? No. They're saying that they believe that Intel will be $20.92 next year. Is that hard? No, it's pretty darn easy, actually. Actually, it's pretty darn easy. And so, let's do the same now for the... Does it mean that it's a good calculation? I don't know. Yeah. And remember, this. What's the website? Everyone should say?
Wonder Woman.
Well, don't be like my 121 students, all right? You're supposed to be a cut above. My 121 students are just... All right, got it? Let's continue. Price to cash flow. So in late 2009, the stock price is 1940. The cash flow per share is equal to $1.74. Whoa! Wait a minute. Their earnings were 92 cents and their cash flow was $1.74? How does that work out? Well, companies like Intel that make chips have huge startup costs. You know, how much does it cost them to make a single chip? You know? $2, $20, no. Maybe that cell processor that they use in the PlayStation costs that much. It costs them a few dollars to make one, right? But before they made that one chip, they had to spend $2 billion to create the facilities to make that chip. They had the research and development. You with me, understand? It cost them $1 billion to make the first one, and then afterwards it cost them $2. So that creates huge depreciation costs. They have all these initial costs, and they have to depreciate that over the life of the 50 million chips or however many chips they make. And so their cash flow is a lot higher than their earnings. And that's typical of companies like Intel. Another company that have huge capital costs, means they need a lot of money. Car companies are like that. To build the first car, it costs you $2 billion, and after that, cars don't cost that much. People think they cost a lot of money to make. They don't. But the huge cost is the startup cost, the fixed cost. If you take managerial accounting, you'll see those situations. So, their five-year average is equal to 10.85, and the analysts and maybe Intel say our growth rate for next year is 7.5%, 7.5%. So we wind up with the exact same calculation. We take the historical P price to cash flow, which is Everyone to say? 10.85. We then multiply it times the projected cash flow per share. But that's easy. The projected cash flow per share is what we're making right now. Come on, listen to me, talk to me. What we're making right now? $1.74 times 1 plus the 7.5%, 1.07, whoops, missed it up. 7.5, right? That's 0.075. So a 10.85 times 1.74 times 1.075 equals $20.29. Which is fairly close to what? Not that close.
Did they give you like exercises like those?
Yeah, I already handed them out.
What is the CFPS
cash flow per share? Pass that back to him.
No, I mean we got it.
Well, we did price divided by earnings. And we also did dividends per share. We did a dividend payout ratio. But we're doing now price ratios. This is taking too long. Now, you got to ask questions. If you're completely lost, you got to go like this. Just go like this. How many people are like this? Just a couple? Are you, yeah? Well, all I can say is do this. Do it. Don't worry about understanding it. You see the numbers there. 10.85, that's the five-year average. Put it there. You see the cash flow per share. Put it there where it says cash flow per share. And then you take this and you add 1 to it. 1.075. And then you get a number. And that's what we believe it's going to be worth in 1 year. The next one is the same idea, folks. We're going to do the exact same thing over again. But this time we have sales per share. Cash flow per share. Sales per share. And sales per share for Intel at the end of 2009 were?
19.
Everyone should say 19.4. 19. Wait till I ask you. Sales per share for cash flow for Intel were? 19.4. And the 5-year average, I'm sorry. No, that's, yeah. 19. What's the stock price? Come on, wake up. 6 points. Wake up, Piano. The sales per share were $6.76. The price was 19.4. The 5-year average ratio is? 5-year ratio is 3.14. And they believe that the sales growth for next year will be 7%. So we do the exact same thing. What's the 5-year average? What's the 5-year average?
Hi,
3.14 times the current sales per share, $6.76, times 1 plus 7%, 1.07, and we get a number that's significantly higher than the other two. So you understand, or have I lost you here a little bit? Just do the calculations. If you need a calculator too, please bring a calculator. If you don't bring one on Tuesday, I'm going to really cry. Now I'm just almost ready to cry. Bring a calculator or bring your laptop. I don't care. It'll work too. Reality check. Can we reasonably assume that the formulas in the previous slides will give us realistic figures?
No.
For some companies, yes. For some companies, no. But there are countless other factors at work. It's like trying to predict the weather, only worse. The major assumption of these models is that the price multiples will remain constant. That these 20.96 numbers and this 10.85 and this 3.14 will stay the same. However, we are using averages without taking into account the variances and the standard deviation. Remember them? In any 1 year, it might be 12.85 or 4.85. That's just the average over the last 5 years. It could be bouncing up like in crazy. Is it reasonable to expect predictions from these models to be accurate if the variance of the averages are large?
No.
No. And so for the record, the price of Intel 1 year later in 2010 was $20.50. Which this is saying 2092, this one said 2029, this one said 2271. Not bad! Well, one out of four ain't good. Because in the third, fourth, and fifth editions, the next year prices were very far from the actual prices. The third editions predicted 19.61, 27.53, and 31.63. It was actually 33.50. The fourth edition predicted 50.84, 43.49, 40.92, and the price was 17.50.
What year was that?
Oh. That was between 2005 and 6. And then the fifth year edition, 25.47, 25.36, and 29.63, it was $20. So the third edition predictions were too low, the fourth and fifth were too high. Gives you a lot of confidence in the price models, huh?
Yeah.
But if you look at the predictions for Disney, which are in the fourth, fifth edition, sixth edition, you'll find that Disney was a whole lot closer to what they predicted. And do you understand why? They're a more stable company, right? Disney has a reliable stream of income. Intel is dependent on businesses ramping up new PC purchases. And businesses are like, we'll hold back now. Or, no, let's get them. We need new machines. So, that was the... those were the price ratio models. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to do worksheet number one. So let's use this puppy to... We're moving slow. So figure, forget it. It ain't going to be March. It's going to be March 12th, which is a Tuesday. Oh, yeah, you're lucky. You think you're lucky. Just wasting all... We're not going to waste the day. We're going to spend it reviewing and doing, looking at some individual companies. So, let's do worksheet number one. Who will read worksheet number... Who will read number one? Who's excited about this? Doesn't this... I don't know about you folks, but this, to me, is so exciting. I mean, this is... I love this so much. Well, I see people going... Yeah, Daniel, read number one.
The price of Nvidia Power is currently 32%. Their earnings per share EPS is 2.25. Their 5-year average is 80. If WBH earnings per share are expected to grow at 5% next year, what would you expect their price to be next year?
So who is this?
We got burnt and how.
Okay. Oh, you remember these now? Yeah, okay. Okay, so their price is $32 per share. Well, it says, if this is the price to earnings, which model do we use? They're all the same model, folks. They work all the same way. But this one is price to earnings. It's all the same calculation, Rogelio. It's the exact same calculation. But first, what do? The first thing we put is the five-year average, the historical ratio. So what's the historical ratio?
18.
The next thing we do is calculate the projected earnings per share. And how do we do that? We take the current earnings per share and multiply it times 1 plus the growth rate. So what's the current earning? What are the current earnings per share?
2.25.
Everyone should say $2.25? If you don't see that, scream and holler. $2.25 times 1 plus the growth rate of?
5%.
Everyone should say 5%. 5%. These are tough questions, folks. See if you can read. And so, we know that that is 0.05... or 1.05. So multiply 18 times 2.25 times 1.05 and you get? Jessica says $42.52? Yes? If not, go like this. Go help! I lost you. Got a calculator?
No.
Makes it hard. Okay. Two. Number two. Number two. How about Eddie? Can I count on you to read number two?
Okay. WBH's cash flow per share CFPS is currently $2.80 per share. The average 5-year average price to cash flow per share ratio is 14. We expect your cash flow per share to grow by 6% next year. What would you expect your price to be next year?
Okay, so it's the exact same model, except now we're looking at cash flow. And their cash flow is coming in higher at their earnings per share, probably because they have some serious depreciation costs. So what do? We take the 5-year average. What do? We take the... multiply it times the current cash flow per share, and then multiply that times what we believe it's going to grow by. 1 plus 6%, or 1.06. And but somebody besides Jessica now, who has a calculator. I'm sorry? 41.52? 5.5? Close enough. Don't try to be too precise. But do write down what your calculator says. Okay, and the last one, hint, is going to be very similar, except now we're going to take a look at the sales per share. And what are their sales per share? Everyone should say $3.20. Wait till I ask you. What's their sales per share? Right. And their 5-year average?
13.
And the expected growth rate?
8%.
So we do the exact same thing. The 5-year average is?
13.
Why don't you answer me? You just don't want to? 13 times the current sales per share of $3.20 times the 1 plus the growth rate, 1.08, and that is equal to 44.92. So you think you could do that? Okay, guess what? That's your assignment for Chapter 6. I'm going to pass out the... I might as well pass them out now. Here are the assignments, and the first three are going to look very similar to the ones we just did.
We got Brendan help.
Yes.
Number four.
Well, we're going to get to number four in a minute here. Well, maybe not, but let's see. 10 minutes. And then we have another worksheet. Thank you. Oh, yeah. We have worksheet number two. And before you leave, I'll give that out so you can do them again. And the answer keys are on the website. And there's a commentary. And so we're going to do these over and over again next week. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Okay, now, because this is so much fun, the dividend discount models. Folks, the book in Chapter 6 starts with these. They put these in the beginning of the chapter, which I think is a mistake, because the price ratios are easier. They put them at the end. I put them first because they're a little bit easier when it gets you primed. So when you go over to the library and read the book, it's gone, read, but it said read over here. Read, you'll see that they put those at the bottom, the price ratios at the end. But the dividend discount models, folks, I believe are the heart. I call them the heart of the course. Once you understand this, and it'll take a few days, you're going to do the calculations, and the calculations are easier than understanding what you're doing. You're going to do the calculations, you're going to go, okay, what am I doing? And then after a while, you're going to say, I now know what I'm doing. Because it's conceptually a little tricky. But what you're saying is, how much is that future cash flow that I'm getting from that company, what's it worth to me today? These dividend discount models believe that the shares of stock are valued on the basis of the present value of the future dividend streams the stock is projected to produce. But we're going to get money from the company. They're going to be paying us dividends. What is it worth to us today? Well, maybe yes, maybe no. And they go, the problem is they go by various names. Dividend valuation models, discounted cash flow models. So you have to be careful. You might hear dividend discount model, you might hear discounted cash flow model. I like this name the best, but it's not as popular. Recall that we said at the beginning of the chapter, the value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. Therefore, dividend discount models should be extremely popular, right? Well, not in the late 90s. During the 1990s, investors who adhered to these types of model were considered old-fashioned, outdated fuddy-duddies. Because what people wanted were capital gains. They weren't interested in dividends. Those investors who stuck to these weathered the 2000 to 2002 downturn very well. They did phenomenally. And people all of a sudden, wow, dividends are cool. Did that help them in 2008?
No.
I mean, instead of going down 50%, they went down 30%, but still, they went down. Here it is in its purest incarnation. The value of the stock is equal to the present value of all expected future dividend payments. Don't worry, we are not going to do these calculations. Remember I told you all you need is add, subtract, multiply, and divide? You don't need exponentiation. And what does it mean? Well, it's saying that the price today, the present value, is equal to the dividend in year number one divided by 1 plus K. What's K? Well, yeah, some places 1,000, in baseball it's strikeouts, so I think it's a bad choice of usage of characters. But what they mean is your required rate of return. What you want to get out of the stock, 5%, 10%, 12%, they chose 15%. So if you sneak 15% in there, and you get a stock that pays you three dividends of $100 each year, and then promptly goes out of business, dumb example, but that's what they used. It should be worth to us today $228.32. Now, don't worry, we're not going to, as I said, we're not going to do this calculation. And we keep referring to this term present value. Present value. What are we talking about? Let's talk. The present value, dear students, is the value of a lump sum or a series of payments. It could be either. The value of a lump sum or a series of payments that is to be received at some future date. In other words, you're telling me you're going to give me $100 next year, $100 2 years from now, and $100 3 years from now. What is it worth to me today? And if you've taken the Business 121 class, you remember we did the future value calculations? Where we said if we put in $100 today, and next month, and next year, what's it going to be worth to us in 30 years? Well, this is the opposite side of the coin. Now, in Chapter 1, I left it for you as an exercise. I'm sure everybody did it. But in Chapter 1, there are the same calculations as the Business 121 class, and there's a commentary, and there's an answer key. But we don't have to do that. To us, that's not as important as going the other way. For us, it's important for us to look into the future and bring the future back to the present. So there are the formulas which we're not going to use. We use the tables. So what I just passed out was the formula sheet, which has all the formulas we've already done, the price ratio formula, and then we're going to do others. And it has the table. And if you remember the table, in the future value table, the numbers got large as you went down and across. What happens to the numbers here as you go down and across? They get smaller. They get smaller. It's the inverse. It's the other side of the coin. In finance, present value tells us what the future value is worth today, because we have to make a decision. How much do we pay for that future stream of income? Make sense? If somebody's going to give you $100 a day or $100 a year from now, what are you going to take? You're going to take $100 today, because $100 a year from now, it won't be worth the same, will it? You're going to say, You give me, yeah, right, it's going to be very similar because inflation is so low. But you're going to say, I'll take the $100 today or I'll take $102 next year because inflation's running at 2%. Or I'll take $110 because I expect a 10% rate of return. Are you with me? That's all we're saying. I know it sounds complicated, but that's all we're saying. How much will I take today, or how much do I have to pay today for $100 or $200 or whatever it is in the future? So, did the formula scare you? Did the formula scare you? This formula has the present value calculations built into it. We mortals, and if you want to do it, go right ahead, folks. You have a spreadsheet. The spreadsheet does it automatically. But we mortals use this. We use the count, the tables. So for example, we multiply, I'm sorry, the formula becomes the dividend in year number one times the present value multiplier, the dividend in year number two times the present value multiplier for year number two, the dividend for number three, year number three times the dividend, the present value multiplier for number three. So here's the example. The same example. We're going to get $100 in 1 year. If our required rate of return is 15%, go across 15%, go down 1 year, what is the multiplier? Anna? 0.870. So multiply $100 times 0.870 and you get $87. What would you rather have? $100 we 1 year from now or $87 today? If your required rate of return is 15%, you don't care. $87 today is in 1 year is worth $100. $87 today would be worth $100 in 1 year if your required rate of return is 15%. Now, I don't like the book's choice of 15%. Do you think that's a reasonable rate of return? I certainly don't. I'm shooting for 8. You know, 8, 9, 10%. You give me more than 8, I'm a happy man. If I get more than 10, but I've shown you some mutual funds that have done 11, 12, right? So there are people who are shooting higher and getting there, and there are people who are shooting higher and not getting there. Exactly. Okay. So now, let's first... Oh, we're out of time. But isn't this exciting? Now, okay, I know this is... I know this might be something you've never done in your life. Oh, yeah, sorry. I know this is something you've never done in your life. But over the weekend... Yeah. Go online, listen to the presentation again. There's an online presentation. Go to the library. If you don't have the book, go to my office. Read the book. Study. Yeah, I know. I know you maybe have never done this in your life. What? Yeah, what is that magic I speak of? Because, you know, it's scary. You might actually get hooked on studying. You might actually go, hey, this is fun, you know. Okay, I'll be with you in a couple hours, but I need to study right now. Okay? One more slide. Doesn't sound like you. Yeah, and there's no television to watch. There's nothing fun happening over the weekend. All right. Who snuck in late? Joe, no. Shannon, no. Jose Avila, wait a minute. I got some for you. William Bobier is here. Where is he? Where's William? Estelle is here. Daniel Castillo, Mr. Bancote. Christian Gonzalez, no. Anna Guerrero, no. Jenna, no. Nathaniel LaMonica is here, isn't he? Pio, Nathaniel? No, I guess not. But Pio is Yesu. Where's Yesu? There he is. Pio is here. Victor Maldonado? No. And Eduardo Medina? No. Your name is?
Carlos
Lopez?
Yeah.
Okay, where have you been?
I'm sorry.
You're not sorry yet. Wait till you take the exam. Okay, you need this thing, and you need this thing. It's all on Wonder Professor. Yes, you turning in? Excellent, Blanca. I got you. I got you. Yeah.